give yourself permission to just be as you are and to feel what you're feeling, because it's actually in the feeling of those things and allowing yourself to be exactly as you are that those feelings are going to be able to help carry you into whatever the next stage of your journey is.
This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm an author and a holistic writing coach who talks with today's top women writers about how to navigate life when things don't go according to plan. These impactful conversations and personal reflections invite you to be seen, feel supported, and ultimately fall back in love with yourself. So let's go together to that honest, powerful place, the heart of the story.
Hi, friends. If you have ever felt alone in your heartbreak, this conversation is for you. Today, I am speaking with author and female mentor, Sarah Avant Stover, about her latest book, Handbook for the Heartbroken. First of all, doesn't that title just give you relief? Because it immediately gives a sense that there is a way through heartbreak, that we can be helped and healed and supported. And that's what her book does. And this conversation with Sarah truly feels like a hand reaching out to help. I don't know a single person who hasn't been through some form of heartbreak. And so when I heard about her brand new book coming out into the world, I knew I had to talk to her. And this conversation did not disappoint. Sarah walks through her own journey of multiple heartbreaks. She calls it serial heartbreaks, and what got her through. And she also provides some really helpful tools for us to help heal ourselves and heal and support each other. It is a must listen. And before we dive in, I wanted to share another tool for support and healing, and that is a 30-minute guided meditation that I've created just for you. It is a reset for the woman in transition, the woman who feels overwhelmed, the woman who is looking for a mini retreat for herself in the midst of busy, overwhelming life. It is a yoga nidra meditation, which is like a full body deep relaxation that's meant to help you find some calm and clarity. You can find it over at my website, nadinekennyjohnstone.com/reset. Let's dive in to today's incredible conversation with Sarah Avant Stover. Sarah, I'm thrilled to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. And like we were just talking about before we started recording, this is my very first conversation, public conversation about the book. So I'm honored to be here with you and your listeners.
Yes, yes, yes. I would love if you could start us off by talking a little bit about some of the personal stories that you share in the book, which stems a lot from the plan that we have of our lives and then how it actually unfolds. So with your own personal story, what were some of the directions you thought your life would be taking and then the twists and turns that came along the way?
Sure. First, I want to just offer the more meta view that I think for all of us women, up until our 40s or very close to our 40s or shortly, you know, a little bit into our 40s, we think our lives are going to be a certain way. And then something happens or a number of things happen, as was the case for me. And we realize that life is actually wanting something different of us. And even in a bigger way, that life is different than we thought that it was. And we are forced or invited, if we don't need to have that forceful messaging, I certainly did, to forge a new relationship with life. And so for me, what that looked like is when I was in my late 30s, it was just a few months after my second book, The Book of She, came out. That came out in October 2015. And so in February 2016 is when life forced me in a new direction. And prior to that, I thought I was trying to follow the more conventional path because I would say I've always been a pretty unconventional person in my 20s when all my friends from high school were getting married and having babies and working at high paying jobs. I was living over in Thailand and teaching yoga and traveling the world. So I've never really done the conventional thing, but I wanted to kind of circle back to that. And so I was engaged at that time with a man that I deeply loved, and a lot of things were not fully in alignment there. And I was also building my career, and I really, my first book, which came out in 2011, was a big success. And I was like on a trajectory there, and life intervened. And then everything that I write about in this book happened. So the kind of initial strike, I'd say of a series of several strikes that happened between 2016 and 2020, and then I write about in the book in depth, was my former fiance came home one night and told me that he had been cheating on me. And for anyone who has had that experience, betrayal just rips you through the core. It doesn't just rip your relationship apart, but it ripped, I'll speak for me personally, it ripped my whole identity apart. And the very fabric of my whole life. And that was tremendous. But that wasn't the only thing that happened. And that set off a whole series of things that happened where I kept thinking, okay, maybe, you know, New Year's would come on a certain year. And I'd say, okay, this is the year things are going to shift for me, that I'm going to get back on track, that I'm going to have my rebirth. And another year would go by, and then another year would go by. And it got to the point where I just gave up even wanting that or asking for that, and just surrendered to, okay, just whatever this year is going to be, I'm here for it. I'm just going to endure it. And I reached a point where I just wondered if I ever even would get out of that dark tunnel, because the blows that I experienced were not only my personal relationship, but also around my identity as mother and tragic abortion, followed by several failed fertility treatments. Then all of this kind of reverberated into challenges in my work and financial challenges, and every aspect, health challenges, every aspect of my life was impacted. There was no stone left unturned.
Yeah. When I read your book, although I've experienced different kinds of heartbreaks and different transitions, I felt seen. Because I, like many women, reached a spot in my late 30s and now early 40s where every role that I once had has shifted, and every path that I had a 30-step plan for has changed. And some for the better, some for neutral, some for worse. And I didn't know if my own transitionings in all of these different areas, if it was just me. And when I heard about the premise of your book and then read the book, I was so glad at least to know that other women experience this deep toiling of the soil, just this deep shifting that happens seemingly all at once and in many different areas at once. For you, is there anything that you can share with other women about kind of some of these signs that you were experienced that almost shows that you're in deep heartbreak, both physical, emotional, and mental signs as well?
Yes. First, I want to name that just what you're speaking to and what this book is about. And one of the things this book is about is a process that we all go through as humans, and we go through a number of soul initiations throughout our lives. And one of them is our midlife initiation, which can start in our 30s, can start sometimes in our mid 30s, and can last for up to 10 years. For some women, it doesn't start until they're in their 40s. But it's this process of shedding our false personality, of shedding the ways that we've been conditioned that's not true to who we are, and then owning and embodying who we truly are and what we're here to do. I don't particularly speak to that in this book. I have a course where I speak to that in more depth because there's just so many other things to cover in this book. But this is something that we all go through, either consciously or unconsciously. And the more consciously we can go through it, just like any initiation, the more we're going to fully land on the other side of that, where we're supposed to be on the other end of the initiation. So some signs that this is coming on for you or that heartbreak is present. Well, if you experience heartbreak, you kind of can't, you can't miss it.
Right. Yeah.
But one of the things that this book really points out is that we all have heartbreaks that haven't fully healed.
Yeah.
And there was actually just a heartbreak as recent as a couple of weeks ago that I fully experienced for the first time from when I was a very little girl. It was related to an experience that I had with my father, just like a very passing experience when I was with him in New York City when I was very young. And he's suffering from dementia now. I'm in a process of doing a lot of review with him and seeing where am I incomplete with him. And I've felt this heartbreak for the first time. And I had known that at an intellectual level. I had known that that was present, but to actually feel it is a whole other thing. And we all have those heartbreaks still living inside of us, waiting for us to feel them fully, to integrate them into the depths of our being. And so this book is not just for heartbreaks that you're currently experiencing or that you recently emerged from, but heartbreaks that you didn't have the capacity to feel or process at earlier stages in life for whatever reason. And some signs that those are operating in you is that maybe you're trying a lot of things. Could be in relationship, it could be in your work in the world, it could be with your finances. And even though you're doing all the quote unquote right things, it's still not actualizing for you. And so rather than working harder or reading another book or taking another course to figure out how to do that, it's like, what in me is still unhealed around this that needs my love and support so that there is less occlusion around my soul really coming in to my body, into my life, into my work, so that these wounds, these heartbreaks are not distorting that process of it fully coming through.
Yeah. I think that's what I picked up as kind of a surprise in that first part of the book was, as you said, we know when we're deep in the throes of certain heartbreaks, but there are others that take us by surprise. There are others that have been really underneath the surface that or buried deep, that it seems like a long time ago. Why is this coming up now? Or I thought I'd healed from this. Why is it resurfacing? Certainly ones where it takes us by surprise. We're just going about our lives and we're in an okay place, and then it seems to come out of nowhere. So I appreciated deeply that your book acknowledged all sorts of different heartbreaks. And the other thing that was beautiful about it were these practical, both journaling prompts and practices and rituals to do while we're in the heartbreak and trying to heal from the heartbreak. You have many different stages. So if someone is listening and they say, I'm in it, I'm in pain, I feel so not like myself, I don't even know what way is up, what way is down, what are some of the things that they might be able to do or reflect on that can help?
The first thing that I would say is connect with your life force and get very basic about that. So make sure you're drinking water. Make sure that you're eating good food. Make sure that you're resting. I know sleep can be elusive. I had insomnia for a lot of that time that I wrote about in the book. So even just resting as much as you can, going for walks, just tending to your life force, because your life force is our connection with source. And the closer we stay to that, the more it will be able to help guide us through the passage that we're going through. The next thing I would say is to really consciously surrender to your higher self and to the higher plan for your life. And one of the things that's happening is that false structures and identities are being shaken loose. And so in their place, we want to attune to and invite in divine order. And nothing fancy is needed here other than just that intention and saying, I intend to align to divine order, to the divine plan for my life and just keep coming back to that, keep coming back to that. Your conscious mind is not going to know how to do that. That's the point, and that's okay. And then to validate however you're feeling. Feeling confused is normal. Feeling depressed, anxious, raging, all of these things are normal. And so as much as you can, give yourself permission to just be as you are and to feel what you're feeling, because it's actually in the feeling of those things and allowing yourself to be exactly as you are that those feelings are going to be able to help carry you into whatever the next moment is, whatever the next stage of your journey is. But the more that we resist those, the more we're going to stay stuck where we are. And that's why a lot of women get stuck on our heartbreak journeys. Maybe we get stuck in the anger because we don't want to feel the anger, or we get stuck in the resentment because we're not fully processing, we're not fully feeling, we're not wanting to go to the grief, but it's turning towards and going in and through, or going in that will help you to go through.
Yeah. And, you know, we have all different listeners, and some might not identify as religious, others might not identify as spiritual. And so if divine doesn't work for them, you mentioned just your highest self. How might someone tune in or tap into highest self?
One example is, for instance, how does an oak tree come to be? So an oak tree is not religious, it's not spiritual, but it has the source of existence running through it. And the oak tree begins from an acorn. And inside that acorn is the holding of the highest unfolding of its potential as a full, fully blossomed oak tree. And it has all the information that it needs to weather the different seasons, weather different challenges that might happen through insects or intense wind or other intense weather patterns. It's all encoded inside that acorn. And so when we are surrendering to our higher being, we are surrendering to that same potential within us that knows who we're here to be, what we're here to become, and how to do that. So again, it's not something that happens at the level of the conscious mind, but it's just tuning into, okay, some aspect of me, a core aspect of me knows how to do this, just like it knew how to grow you in the womb and to be born and to take your first breaths and to, you know, to beat your heart, all the things that we don't think about. So surrendering to attuning to that dimension of our being has nothing to do with religion, but has everything to do with things that we don't and can't consciously control.
Yes. And you have so many beautiful prompts in the book. Like there's the four G's. There are so many useful prompts in there. But is there anything that we can ask ourselves in the journal or just as we're going for a walk or meditating that helps get away from the intellectual mind and into that more higher self mind?
One is a practice that I speak about in the book that I learned from one of my teachers, Miranda McPherson, and that is remembering to open, soften, and allow our experience to be exactly as it is. How that looks practically speaking is say that I have a challenging day at work and say that I get a challenging email from someone that is activating and makes me feel anxious, makes me feel angry. Then I might go for a walk after work and I go often go for a walk on a around the lake behind my house. And I'll just walk and I'll say, you know, I'm just going to open, soften, and allow this experience to be exactly as it is. Maybe part of that walk, I'll be thinking about it and processing it intellectually. Mm-hmm. But instead, I get curious and just, okay, what is it like in my body when I'm feeling this? What's it like in my mind? What emotions am I feeling? And how can I just let these be here without needing to fix or change them or get rid of them?
Yeah.
So that's definitely the first piece. It's just starting where we are and keep returning to where am I now? And how can I just be where I am, even if it's just for a breath or two breaths or, you know, however much you can manage. It's not necessarily about quantity, but more about just the quality of letting ourselves be where we are.
Mm-hmm. And I think that so often society doesn't allow for that, doesn't remind us that that's okay, doesn't make time or space for it. So we are the ones that have to make time and focus on the allowing it to be as it is. And one of the other healing modalities that you talk about quite often and you're certified in and that I've had such benefits from myself is IFS, internal family systems. And so you integrate it into all you do, but it seemed to have played a large part in your healing work. Might you be able to talk a little bit about what we can do if we're in our own heartbreak journeys to bring some IFS work in for healing?
Yes, I was introduced to IFS right before all this happened. And first time I was introduced to it, it was in 2014 by one of my longtime mentors. She had started training in it. I was so impacted by the work that we did prior to that first incident and learning about the betrayal. Then when that happened, she encouraged me, she challenged me even is to do weekly IFS, even though it felt like a stretch for my budget because I was dealing with grief and, you know, my whole life was falling apart. But it was one of the best investments I've ever made in myself. And what those sessions helped me to do was to really get to the root of why were these patterns kind of recurring in my life? What were they pointing me to? What was the outer experiences in our lives are reflections of things that are happening internally. They're sacred mirrors. So it's helping me to see, wow, I thought I was a really conscious person. I'd done a lot of personal development, a lot of therapy, a lot of spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. I taught all these things. And how could my life get to this point where all these things were blowing up? Mm-hmm. And IFS gave me the tools to start to go to the root of that. And that is, I think, the most beautiful thing about it. It lets us do that in a way that is really gentle. And it's not scary. It's not overwhelming. Because we often think that it will be if we go to the root of those things. So for someone who's curious about IFS, I would say, I feel like the book gives you kind of a step-by-step introduction to it. But one of the first things that we can do is start to notice that we're not our thoughts, we're not our feelings. Those are held by parts of us. So if we feel anxiety, that's held by parts of us that are holding anxiety. If we feel unworthy, those are parts of us that are feeling unworthy. It's not our true self. But likely, if those parts are getting loud, if you have a critical part inside that's really loud, that is a call for you to attend. Mm-hmm. And it's showing you a younger version of yourself that went through a challenging experience, just like we were talking about earlier, that was not fully processed and that is needing you to reparent it, to not let it take over your system, to not let it be running your life, but for you to come into a conscious relationship with it and to help it have the repair that it never had through external caregivers. So that first step is just noticing when you get taken over and recognizing that that's not even you.
Yeah, and there's beautiful dialogue that we can have with our parts and recognizing the different roles that are playing within the parts. And I think the book definitely introduces it for anyone who's unfamiliar, but also showcases how you can use it in your heartbreak journey for healing. You also mention in the book asking others for help, those in our lives for help. I was so struck after I read the book. I put it down, I took out my journal. And I wrote a list of people that I wanted to ask for help. And then I wrote down, because of your book, specific asks, because you gave a whole list of bullet points of things that you can ask other people for when you are going through heartbreak. And it's one of the hardest things to do is the ask for help. So can you tell us a little bit about the asking for help, why it's so hard, but why it's so needed and what we can do?
We live in such a hyper-individualistic world. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book, because that orientation of our culture was really, really damaging for me. Over those several years, I felt increasingly lonely increasingly isolated. I lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot in my life, and I didn't feel like I had the support that I needed. And I know that that's very common. And one of the things that you're pointing to is that we're just conditioned to be self-sufficient, to do it all ourselves, and that there's something wrong with you if you need help. And that's how we're raised in an individualistic world. And it's one of the, I think, the biggest tragedies of this time that we're here to correct, because we're not going to make it through challenge, individual or collective, without community support, without realizing our interdependence, without realizing that it's okay to be needy, it's okay to be vulnerable, and that we all go through these periods of hardship at different times and in different ways. And our culture is so success oriented and so failure phobic. Ask any person who has achieved a significant level of success in their lives, and they will have some of the biggest stories of failure. So we can see in actuality that failure is part of the pathway in life and to success, and to, even if you just define success as becoming who you truly are, those periods of hardship where we grow the most. And yes, we can grow through joy, but I think we could all agree that it was in the times of challenge that we really evolved the most. I know that that's true for me. So we need to lean into that edge of vulnerability and realizing maybe when everything is going well, maybe I can kind of do things on my own, kind of. But when things start to fall apart, we simply can't. And it's a great opportunity for us to make the asks, and for also for the people around us to lean in and break out of their own myopic focus on their own individual lives and see who around me is suffering and how can I support them. Then we'll see who our real friends are, and likely things will shift in terms of our friend circles or social circles in some form or another when we're going through a challenge, because likely those people who are going to step in and support us are people who've experienced something themselves and they know what it's like. So now I have a much more finely tuned radar when someone's suffering, and I'm being proactive. I'm bringing them meals. I'm checking in on them. And I wasn't like that before in this way, because I've been there. I get it. And I don't want people to feel that same sense of isolation that I felt.
Yeah. I went through a lot of infertility struggles when we were trying to have a family. And up until then, I don't think I've fully realized that just about everyone on my path has had deep heartbreak, and I didn't quite know how to empathize or support. And it wasn't until going through that that I would walk down the street and just kind of go, I wonder what heartbreak they're dealing with today. I wonder what loss they are experiencing. Because if I'm just walking around seemingly normal, but my heart is breaking, then just about everyone around me probably has felt or feels that way too. And now what can I do? How can I listen better? How can I resist the urge to bright side everything? How can I be there truly as a support? So for anyone who's witnessing a beloved going through deep heartbreak, what do you think we can do for them? You mentioned meals, of course, that always helps, but what else helped you a lot during this? And what do you think we can do when someone else is suffering?
For me, and I think every heartbreak is a bit different in terms of, especially in terms of who we're living with. And I was living alone when I was going through this. And so that had a significant impact. So for me, what helped the most was just having people available to talk to. And I'm normally a very introverted person. I can go for a long time without talking to any living being. And I'm very fine. So I was really surprised when I went into shock right after the news of that betrayal, where I just needed to constantly be talking to someone. Even if it was just through text message, I could not be by myself. And so it was really supportive to know that I had certain people I could call and that they would pick up the phone, that they wouldn't try to give me advice. They'd just be there with me. They'd let me talk. They wouldn't try to make me somewhere that I wasn't or someone that I wasn't. Offering to go for walks, offering to have me over for dinner. That was a big thing for me, going over to people's homes for dinner and having that sense of a normal meal time with people instead of eating all by myself. So just finding ways to create those connections during times when connections are often ruptured. Those core connections in someone's life are often ruptured, and there's a sense of being very adrift while things reconfigure.
Yeah. And at the end of the book, we see so much has changed that many of these areas in which there was heartbreak, there's been a sort of feeling of getting through to another side. What do you think helped the most? What do you think, beyond other people's support, what do you think were some of the aspects that allowed you to not only heal, but move through?
One of the things was fully surrendering. Say that's the biggest thing. And it took me a while to get there. I went through different stages of it, but ultimately I was able to get to a place of just, I don't know what life wants for me. And realizing, okay, I just need to let go of any plan that I have, because any plan that I have is just blowing up in my face. So getting to that point, and it takes what it takes to get to that point. For me, it took a lot, obviously. What I said in the beginning, continually surrendering to my higher being. And even in some of my moments of the greatest despair, and I remember a particular night after I had my abortion, where I was just like spinning and swirling in pain and confusion and regret and what is happening? Who am I? Is this even my life? How, just not comprehending, but a deeper part of me trusting my soul's path and knowing at some level my soul chose this for me. So even in those moments of the most despair, just tapping into that connection with my own higher self, the higher self knows the way through, and just handing it over to that dimension of myself. I would say those two things, along with IFS. So IFS works with the level of our personality, of our humanity. And again, our outer is created from our inner. And so seeing, okay, if my outer is looking like this, then this is pointing me to very specific wounds inside of me that I still haven't accessed. For whatever reason, I haven't accessed those yet. And how can I stay with this process? Be patient. Some of the core principles of IFS are patience and persistence. Be patient, be persistent, even if this is taking years longer than I thought it would or than I want it to. Staying with the process. And then things started to shift externally. And I think one of the biggest shifts for me was meeting my partner now, who I met kind of at the tail end of this process in 2020. At that point, I'd given up looking for a partner. So it's like when we give up, we let go, things happen.
Yeah.
And even when I first met him, I wasn't thinking, this is my person, this is my partner. But in retrospect, looking at him, he is whole. He is kind. He is an external reflection of me now, of my own wholeness. And that was just direct feedback from life of, okay, I did it. I healed those parts of me that didn't think they deserved this, or that needed to keep creating a certain kind of a pattern in my relationship life, is one of the areas, until I healed it. But now the feedback is that that is healed.
I like that. The signs of feedback pointing to that healing has happened or occurred.
And not giving up on ourselves. Because I hear so often from women, I've been working on this for so long. I'm never going to get there. It's not going to work for me. And just to validate that that is part of the process. It's normal when we feel that way, when we think that. We really, really have to stay with it, especially if you're working in, you know, working in a like a systematic way, like we're talking about here. You're not just fumbling around, you know, not doing any specific thing, but if you're really delving into a specific healing pathway, you know, like IFS or like really tuning into your higher self, you will get through it if you stick with it long enough.
And you stuck with it long enough that you even were able to get to a place of writing about it. That's a whole journey in and of itself. Many of the women who listen are writers, and in particular, writers who write creative nonfiction, memoir, personal essay. It is no small feat to write about the personal. So, can you tell us a little bit about the book's journey into this world and your initial plan for it and how things kind of morphed and shifted?
Sure. A few months after my relationship with my former fiance fell apart, being a public figure and being someone who has used her life experiences as her teachings. So that happened in February. And then in June, I published an article on my blog that I shared on social media about what happened. And that's the opening story in this book now, the first heartbreak story. And then 2 years later, I published a little bit more than 2 years later, I published the story about my abortion, which was a very big moment for me. And that was before Roe v. Wade was overturned and more people were talking about abortion. It was still even more taboo than it is now. That was a pivotal moment. So I had those two core stories in place. Let's say that. And then I'll backtrack and say that also in, I think it was 2017. I can't remember. It was either 2016 or 2017. I created an online course called Healing from Heartbreak. And I started to feel like I wanted to write a book about heartbreak and about grief in particular. And so I started working with someone. I was going to hire her and her agency to help me with a book proposal. We never moved forward with it, but we had some initial conversations. And then I started to put together a table of contents, maybe like a couple years later. I put that on the back burner a couple years later. This was like early 2019. Started to put together a table of contents, sample chapter, and I submitted it to my former publisher, the one who published my first two books, even though my intuition told me when I finished my second book, that with my next book, it was time to move on to a different publisher and to get an agent because I didn't have an agent for my first two books. But I was in such a low place in 2019 that I reached the point where I was kind of grasping for straws. And I just so badly wanted something that felt familiar, something that I felt I could hold on to. So I was turning against that inner guidance. Again, this is fighting reality. And my former publisher read through it and just said, books on grief don't sell well. So we're going to respectfully decline this. And my deeper being kind of knew that was going to happen because that wasn't the right path. But I let the book go at that point. And I realized, life is trying to move me in a different direction. I can't force this. It's not going to happen. And I released the book because the title came to me in 2016, Handbook for the Heartbroken came to me in 2016. Often the titles come to me first and then I figure out what the book is.
Yeah.
But I let it go. And I didn't think I would ever write it. I didn't think I'd ever write a book again. And then when my life started coming back together, especially starting in 2021, I started off that year saying, feeling that the spirit of the book was still with me. And I really tuned into it. And it was like, no, I'm here. You're meant to write me. We're doing this. And so I started just sitting down and working on the book proposal. I think I started full force with that in the beginning of 2022 and found my top choice agent. Immediately after that, we signed with Sounds True. Shortly after that, I signed my contract. I wrote the book within a few months. It was the easiest creation that I've ever brought into the world, the most joyful creation. And it was a matter of just waiting for the right time and trusting that higher plan. Because when that was ready to be laid out, everything flowed.
And beyond the timing of it too, Were there any particular things that you think either in the writing or in the proposal? Well, first, are there any things that you think kind of helped to find that right fit agent? And then were there any things within the proposal that you think, you know, really appealed to Sounds True?
I needed to be complete with my process. I needed to be fully through it and not kind of half baked. So that was a big part of it, so that I could write it from a place that wasn't about processing or rehashing things or feeling the emotions of it. It was like I'd done that so thoroughly that I didn't need to do that anymore. And I think in terms of also finding the right home for this book, it's looking at the larger world. And I often feel into the zeitgeist as I'm writing a book. It's like, what is happening in the larger collective consciousness that this book is helping to speak to? And what's different between 2019, or when I started working on it, and 2022, when I picked it up again, was that we had all gone through the pandemic. And no longer is it true that books about grief don't sell well, because everyone was experiencing heartbreak in a much deeper way than ever before. And we continue to, because that's just the state of the world right now. It needs to be part of our conversation.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't able to speak to that initially in my proposal in 2019, but I was able to weave in not only all the insights I'd gained from completing that journey that I've been on, but also the state of the world, and weaving those two together. It just makes sense.
It is huge, because as much as readers want to listen to and read an author's personal story, they want to see themselves in it. They want to feel like they are being spoken to, like they are being seen and heard. And so it's a wonderful bit of advice for creatives out there, in particular writers, to really think about how your message ties into the greater context of what's going on in the world. So I want anyone out there who wants this book to be able to get the book. So please tell us about you and the book and where people can find you, all the goodies.
Well, the book can be found at handbookfortheheartbroken.com. And depending upon when this comes out, there's different gifts that readers can get when they order the book from that website. Mm-hmm. You submit your receipt and you get certain gifts to help accompany your heartbreak journey. There is an audio version of the book on Audible, as well as just a paperback copy of it. And I'm teaching various retreats around this theme. Some are for women entrepreneurs, where I speak specifically to how we keep showing up in our work as life challenges happen. And some are just more for the general public of women. I have one this summer happening at Kripalu called Healing from Heartbreak. And I also have a longer immersion called Becoming You, where I go through this process that we talked about in the beginning, this kind of soul initiation process of shedding all that we are not, rewiring ourselves. So healing those wounds that have been hard to reach, so that we can become who we truly are and to do the work that we're here to do, or make the contribution that we're here to make. And all of those can be found on my website. My main website is sarahvonstover.com, but you can find that through handbookfortheheartbroken.com as well.
I'll put all the links in the show notes. You have so much to offer. And I'm so, so glad that you came on today to talk about your beautiful book.
Me too. Thank you for the just a really thoughtful questions and heartfelt questions. And again, I'm grateful that this was my kind of kickoff conversation around this new creation.
Well, friends, I hope that this conversation gave you a sense of deep relief and support. I know that each of us is going through or has gone through some form of heartbreak. And so if you know of a friend who's in a hard time right now and could really use this conversation, go ahead and share it with her. I think it'll be a really helpful resource in helping women get through difficult times. if you want to share what your favorite takeaways were, tag me. I'm at Nadine Kenny Johnstone on Instagram, and Sarah is at Sarah Avant Stover. Another fabulous woman who's given me so much support is my incredible producer, Michelle Rado. Thank you for all you do. And remember, everyone, every heart has a story, and every story has a heart. See you soon.